Welcome to another episode of Surge's Faith, Work, and Rest podcast. My name is Jim Mullins. I'm one of the co-founders and hosts of the Faith, Work, and Rest initiative, and we exist to help people discern their callings, to reimagine their work in light of the biblical story, and to help people cultivate healthy rhythms of rest. If you are someone who is hungering or desiring any of those sorts of things, we would love to help you go deeper. We would love to walk with you, and that's what this podcast is about. The classes we teach, the resources we create, the coaching that we do, it's all for those things. And with that said, we have a resource, something we would like to get in your hands that we believe can be very helpful for you. We call it the Vocational Planning Canvas. It's a tool to help people work through questions of calling, to reimagine the hardest, most complex aspects of work, and to cultivate rhythms of rest, to set goals. It's not going to answer all those questions for you, but it is a tool that will help you have a degree of intentionality. So you can download it for free at faithworkrest.com. And if there are other ways that we can walk with you on your vocational journey, don't hesitate to reach out to us at faithworkrest.com. With that said, let's go ahead and launch into the podcast. So I'm here with Svetlana Papazov, someone whom I have admired from afar, her leadership, her writing, and the many ways that she helps in this faith and work movement. And Svetlana, it is a real gift to have you on this podcast. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you so much. It is such a pleasure and a privilege to talk to your audience today.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us the short bio of who you are.
Absolutely. I'm a church planter and a lead pastor, really throughout my life, a serial entrepreneur who started an entrepreneurial center. So I lead this beautiful expression in Richmond, Virginia, where we scale up businesses and help entrepreneurs figure out how they can get to more influence in the marketplace. I also business consult churches and business consult entrepreneurs how to start their own ventures.
Wow.
So those are the couple of hats that I wear.
Those are many hats. Yeah, you have a whole collection of hats.
Yeah.
So that our audience can get to know you a little bit, we like to ask these rapid fire questions where we just kind of get a one sentence snapshot of who you are. So outside of the Bible, what has been the most influential book that you have read?
Leading on Empty by Wayne Cordiero.
Great, great. And how about the most influential relationship outside of your family?
I have to say it is my first grade teacher who recognized the potential in me and found ways that were very meaningful to encourage my development.
Wonderful, wonderful. What was that teacher's name?
Her name was Rosita.
Rosita, that's great.
Yeah.
What's one place, a physical location that has helped make you who you are?
I have to give credit to Acton University.
Oh, really?
Yes. As I began a few years ago, probably about now 10 years ago, when I first got there, so many wonderful Christians from different streams of Christian faith, from about 90 countries, all come together to talk about how do we bridge this sacred secular divide, was really influential to me, to impacting my own understanding and in my own journey.
That's wonderful.
In that intersection. Yes.
Yeah. Some really good stuff there. And what does rest look like for you?
Now, I have to be honest. Rest for me comes in a few hours segments, not necessarily days. I just mentioned how many hats I'm wearing. And as a church planter who's and lead pastor of a church that is only 3.5 years old, in addition to leading the congregation, having to lead the entrepreneurial center, I find snippets of rest instead of full days of rest. But what that looks like for me is solitude. I like to have devotional times when I'm not studying the Bible for sermon prep, but just to feed my soul and go into prayer without asking God for any problem solving, just being there in his presence. In addition to that, really, when I rest, I like to do active things. So walking, competitive outdoor games, this really is rest to me.
That's great. And what would you say are the small things that you do each day that have the most significant effect on the fruitfulness of your work?
Definitely solitude time at the very beginning of my day. Mm. If I don't do that and I allow some crisis to displace that time, my day becomes less fruitful and more stressful. And at the end of the day, I'm figuring out that instead of doing more by ignoring the solitude time, I actually did less. I did a lot of activity. It wasn't as fruitful.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And tell us a little bit, if you would. I know you wear many hats, but help us understand what the Real Life Center is all about.
Yes. So the Real Life Center came out of the theological understanding that our church must embed itself in the marketplace and make a real difference in our community. So the mission of our Real Life Center for Entrepreneurial and Leadership Excellence is really to bridge the sacred and secular divide in very practical ways in order to lift our community economically, socially, and spiritually. Mm. So we do that through several ways. We open up place for entrepreneurs to gather and learn. We do entrepreneurial workshops, leadership workshops. It also becomes a center of networking. We do a lot of meetups at our place. Just had actually on Friday, the National Speakers Association, of which I currently became the president-elect for the Virginia chapter. Mm. And so we had an amazing gathering there with somebody that was a speaker, Mike Frank, who has booked numerous big names on big stages, people, and he was able to share some depths of who they are. But one of them being Zig Ziglar. And the Entrepreneurial Center has this amazing opportunity to bring influencers from around the country and sometimes from around the world. And our local leaders, entrepreneurs, people that aspire to grow in their own development can come and utilize the space.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah.
What's the relationship between the Real Life Center and Real Life Church?
Those two are very tightly connected. The Real Life Center is the missional arm, if I can say it this way, with which we reach our community. We engage the community, we scale up businesses, we bring literal dollar amounts. The GDP of our place grows because of what the Entrepreneurial Center does. I believe that the church has to be an active player in the marketplace and to make sure that it also cares about the economy of the place that God has called us to serve. So we make sure that we show what the love of God looks like as we go into our marketplace and take care of small businesses and entrepreneurs who can grow and scale up in our place. And in this way, we truly translate the gospel for 21st century understanding. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that this ties in very well with your book. It seems like this is something that you're doing, but you've also reflected on it through your book, Church for Monday. And I would love to ask you some questions about that book. So first of all, what would you say is the core message of the book? Like if you just had a minute to tell someone about your book, what would it be?
So Church for Monday is truly a call to action, and it has a proven plan to unite the worship on Sunday to mission on Monday. This is the call of God to the church. And so in the book, Church for Monday, I'm offering the local church a practical retooling to equip believers for the work week on Monday and to regain relevance in the lives of the lapsed and non-Christians, which we have plenty right now in North America. And I'm leading in this book a discussion how to reestablish the church's witness in the public arena. Because churches equipping for Monday must seek sustainable ways to grow spiritually, socially, and economically, both themselves and the communities they serve. So I'm offering the gospel for this new generation, and it's pretty much a how-to book on what the churches can practically do to engage their community for impact and influence.
That's wonderful. And I really enjoyed my reading of it. I think it is... It's both really practical and tangible, but also creative and visionary. And speaking of creative, I like to ask out-of-the-box questions to authors, some playful hypothetical questions. So I would like to lead in with one of those. I want you to imagine it became illegal to have multiple chapter books for some strange reason, and you could only preserve one chapter of the book. Which one would you preserve?
I would preserve recalibrating the scorecard of the church.
Yeah. Why is that one? Why that one?
I think that encapsulates what Church for Monday is all about. I'm talking about what we count in most churches throughout North America at present. We count what is important on Sunday. And I think in order to make a lasting impact in the marketplace, in our society at this time, when most people have exited church, we must recalibrate what we count. And so we usually count the three B's, you know, the bodies, budgets, and buildings. And I'm making a case that we need to begin to count those three B's, not just what impact they make on Sunday morning, but what is the importance of the buildings, the budgets, and the bodies, the people that we reach throughout the week, Monday through Saturday?
Yeah. So what would it look like if you could walk through those three? What would it look like to count the budgets and seeing how our budget is not just serving our own community, but contributing to the economic flourishing of God's world?
Yes, absolutely. So most of the churches really count budgets that have something to do with ministry expressions, but they usually concentrated around the Sunday expression or maybe a short mission trip that somebody would go on. And I'm just proposing that we can begin to count how our budgetary investment impacts the actual economic development of our place. How about if we begin to offer scholarships to young students from distressed neighborhoods? How about if we are looking to maybe invest in the employment training or retraining for employment? What would it look like if we do some initial investments in entrepreneurial ventures that seem aligning with the core values of biblical principles? How could we expand the influence of the church into the marketplace in this way? I think that just really would regain relevance. We as a church would bring some very valuable impact into the marketplace, in the economy of our place, in the economy of our families that we care for. And people will, I believe, begin to pay attention to what the church has to say in the other areas of life beyond the economic. But if we are not making impactful difference in the economy of our place, I think a lot of people completely disregard what the church has to say in the other areas as well.
Yeah. And what does it look like to measure bodies or attendance differently?
Yeah. So how about if we measure not just who comes on Sunday morning, but who did we reach on Monday morning to help them find a job, to help them parent better, to help them go through some traumatic experiences that they're encountering at school or at work, what would that do for the church, for the relevance of the church in our society? People would love to come to a place like that. We practice this. We do that very often. We do workshops, training environments. We actually open our place for with different focus. We go from parenting to entrepreneurship to retraining for work to encouraging young adults to look for careers that align with their desires and call and passion in their life. And so that brings us to their awareness. And maybe they were not thinking about coming on a Sunday morning to a church, but because they came on a Monday morning to a workshop, they're much more likely to also try on Sunday morning and see what we may have to say to them in terms of their spiritual growth as well.
Yeah. And how do you suggest we reimagine the way that we look at our buildings and our properties?
Yes. How about if our properties that stay open and empty for the majority of the week, how about if we offer them for meetups, networking events, trainings for different corporations, entrepreneurs, business owners? What about if we have maybe extra offices or spaces that the kids maybe occupy on Sunday morning, but then they're empty on Monday morning? What if some entrepreneurs can rent those offices for a very reasonable cost? And this way we help them get going, provide an environment for spiritual, social, and economic growth for those entrepreneurs. We do that at our place. We have six entrepreneurs. We are only housed in 3,200 square feet. Yet we have permanently six businesses that that house themselves within our place. And also we have an open environment, an open space that we do workshops all the time with different focuses. So we reach hundreds of entrepreneurs, small business owners, parents, and senior citizens throughout the entire year, during Monday through Saturday, not necessarily just on Monday. So we are dual using our buildings.
Yeah, that's incredible. So if you could tell us about maybe some of the stories that you have seen as you've implemented these things, what have been the most encouraging stories? Maybe if you could just share a couple of those.
Yeah, absolutely. So one Sunday, we have just finished a church, and we usually have coffee and bagels after service, not before. And people just hang around and linger, and it's about 45 minutes later, they're still there on campus. And we were about to close the doors as we were finishing this coffee bagel time. And I see a photographer outside through our glass doors that is taking pictures. And I decided to go out and just welcome him on our property. His name is Terry. He thought that I am going there to chase him away and say how he is trespassing as he's taking pictures of a model. He brought his client to our place because we're on a lake and it's a beautiful property. We have a gazebo in the front of our church. And the church, by the way, has a real life. It hangs, it says real life. I don't think that he knew exactly he's at a church location, just that he's looking at the sign, obviously knowing it is somebody else's property. And as I'm approaching, he's apologizing for trespassing. And I said, no, you're fine. Just keep doing what you're doing. Tell me who you are. And he said, I'm a photographer, a local photographer. And I said, I'm Pastor Svetlana. And he said, oh, I'm trespassing at a church property. I said, no, you're welcome at a church property. So I encouraged him to go ahead and take pictures. And I said, and by the way, if you ever need an office, if you want to have an indoor photography taken, we just happen to have an empty office that you can do that. He was so impressed. He came, he took me up at my offer. Came to take some pictures inside the office as well. And the next Sunday, he came up to church at 10:30 on Sunday morning with his wife because we treated him so well. And then Terry now is a regular member of our church. Terry and Brenda became members of the church, and they have begun growing in their relationship with Jesus, just got water baptized last month, which is really a joy to watch these transformations.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, what would you say are some of the main defining characteristics of a church for Monday as opposed to a church for Sunday? I think you've mentioned some of them for sure, but I think it would just be good to name them.
Absolutely. I believe that there are three main characteristics that a church for Monday exemplifies. And the first one is whole life discipleship, equipping believers to become whole life disciples. We cannot compartmentalize our faith. We need to take what we believe in from Sunday to Monday. We celebrate it beautifully on Sunday morning, but unless we walk it on Monday morning at work, then our witness is decreased. Then the second one is we must translate the gospel for cultural eligibility. We live in the 21st century in North America, which is not quite, you know, progressed as the European environment is, but we're getting close to that. So we have so many churches that have left, I mean, so many people that have left the church. And so we need to speak about our faith in a way that our community can understand, in a way that our co-worker can relate to what we are saying. We need to find ways to exemplify what caring for our neighbor looks like. This is why the third component is so very important, and it is being embedded in the economy of our place. If God has positioned us in a city, rural area, it doesn't matter where we are, in the middle of urban settings, in a distressed or affluent area, really does not matter the place. If we feel that God has called us to serve that place, then we must ask ourselves, in what way are we to economically develop that place? It's easier to think if the place is somewhat in distress that we have to look for economic development. It is a little bit harder to imagine why we need to look to develop a developed economy. But what I have seen is the disconnect between the love and care, those core values that we carry, that are very Christian, very deeply embedded Christian. It's very hard to talk about those core values, especially in affluent North America. But if we can show them that we care about the very things that our neighbor cares about, and usually this is the economy. Anywhere you go, anywhere you survey people, they will tell you that they care about the economy. They care about their personal economy. And so if we can do things, if the church can embed itself to make a real lasting difference in the marketplace, developing even developed places, even further, growing them in a holistic way where we see just wages, where we see mercy and righteousness established in the marketplace, then we exemplify godly core values right into the marketplace by developing it in a Christian-like manner. So it's very important to embed ourselves in the economy to make a real lasting difference in all the environments that God has called his church to make a difference.
Yeah. So one of the things that stood out to me is the phrase embedded in the economy. Mm-hmm. Can you give some tangible examples of what it looks like for God's people to be embedded in the economy?
Yes. So we do that two ways. We do it through the scattered church, and we also do it through the gathered church. So it's kind of easy to understand how we do that through the scattered church. I mean, we go all to work, and we impact the economy, and we exemplify Christ in us as we treat people in a godly way, as we make sure that the human dignity is being honored with everybody that we work, you know. So the scattered church is a little bit easier for us to understand. On Monday, we all go to work and we put God on display as we work. But so the question is, can the gathered church also make a difference in the economy? And should not the church be present in the dialogue about the national economy? I think that's very important for us to do, because through work, obviously, people contribute tangibly to the economy. And can the church, as a gathered church, maybe train for work retrain for work, bring certain principles, godly principles in that training. So as people enter the economy, then they carry that within them. And also to expand the financial capacity to love our neighbors, both spiritually and economically. So being embedded in the economy as a church could look like what we do. You know, we have an entrepreneurial center where we literally help people start their businesses or scale them up. Mm-hmm. But it could also look like opening daycares. A lot of churches know how to do that very well. But what about if the church thinks deeply about a model of a daycare that helps young families to bring their kids there without overexpanding and being able to teach the kids in Christian curriculum, in Christian core values, but at the same time not empty entirely the pocket of that young family that often struggles, and it looks at, could the mother go to work or should the mother stay at home or the father sometimes stay at home because they cannot afford daycare. They cannot afford to both go to work and also pay somebody else to take care of their kids. So how about if the church maybe embeds itself in the economy to strengthen the economic outflow that that family would have if they offer daycares that takes that into consideration? So it doesn't always have to be developing jobs. You could actually help the economic development of a family by being very creative to do what the church knows how to do well.
Yeah.
And for every church, it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that vision. Now, one of the things that's interesting is you talk about the distinction between a bivocational pastor and a co-vocational pastor. And it seems like there are distinct pastoral practices and mindsets that really lead to this Monday church. This seems to be one of them. Can you tell us the difference between bivocational pastor and a co-vocational pastor?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking this question. Until now, most of the pastors that would identify themselves as working outside of the church, they'll call themselves bivocational. But mm-hmm. I think the co-vocational lens helps us tear down the sacred and secular divide. And it affirms all callings as having kingdom value, worth, and dignity. And in this respect, all work we do is worship unto God and can be seen as full-time ministry done in different settings. So often pastors, because of necessity, would work two jobs, one at church and one in the marketplace. But the thing is that as the church can bring them on full-time salary, they very quickly drop the marketplace job because the marketplace job is looked at maybe somewhat of an unnecessarily burden, you know, or unnecessary evil, or somehow preventing the pastor from doing the pastoral duties. But in reality, the co-vocational pastors are looking at their work in the marketplace as being aligned with the purpose and the focus of expanding Jesus's kingdom. The co-vocational pastor doesn't keep a secular job just to pay the bills and to look at it as a necessary secular evil in order to fulfill the true calling of the sacred. Neither is counting the days for when they can financially be healthy, the church can bring them on a full-time pay. Instead, the co-vocational pastor sees the value of being personally embedded in the economy to interact and reach to the culture outside of the Christian workplace. And I think this is such an important thing because unless the pastor keeps their finger on the pulse of the marketplace, on the pulse of the community, we some, you know, to an extent lose what the marketplace really is crying for. And we need to be embedded in the economy in order to hear what people that are engaged outside of the church walls for the majority of their waking hours are doing in the marketplace. And what are the ills and what are the cries of the marketplace that the church can answer?
That's good. Now, it seems like you have a real pulse on culture and what's happening in the world today. I'd be curious just to ask about some of the themes of part two of your book, where you talk about the major currents of Western culture, What are those and what are the implications for how we exist as a church in the 21st century?
There is certain things that are kind of common for North America, even really in the West, you know, Europe, North America. And I do have a sense that it's because we're such a globalized economy now that it seeps throughout. And it probably, to an extent, is valid for most church environments. One thing that I have noticed as some of the major currents of the Western culture is the reductionism of the gospel. Mm-hmm. So we individualized our salvation. And because it's so individualized, we keep it private and we put it in a compartment. And we don't feel like we need to integrate our faith into the larger life that we do. And then because of that, we have truly seen the secularization, the sacred secular divide. So we are keeping a private faith to ourselves. And we agree that faith needs to happen on Sunday morning within church walls. And when we walk outside in the marketplace on Monday morning, then that's the secular world out there. And we separate these two existences, yet we're holistic beings, and God never exited any part of his creation. He's everywhere. Our enemy of the souls, you know, the devil has not created any part of any spheres of life. God created it all, and he desires to redeem it all. But unless we bridge this sacred secular divide, it's just not going to happen. But this reduction of the reductionism of the gospel leads us to think that there is a sacred and secular realm, and it's okay for us to divide them and not bridge them. But I have a friend that often would say, hey, what is not sinful, it's sacred. And I like to look at things like that and say, what God has not created, you know, all the beautiful cities that we have and the states that we have and the lands that roll through them belong to God. There are no nations that are excluded from belonging to God. It is actually our call to go and recapture what has been lost to God. And so it's very important for us to bridge that sacred secular divide, especially embedding ourselves in the economy so we can make a tangible difference and representation of who God is and how God loves our neighbor through the economics of our life. And the last thing that's quite prevalent right now, I see it very often in the environments that I provide for entrepreneurs, small business owners, is that thirst for the spiritual, but it's actually syncretistic. Like people would say, yeah, I'm spiritual, but they quickly would tell me, not necessarily Christian. And when you talk with a lot of our neighbors nowadays, it's not like they don't believe there is a higher power, but they're not quite sure who the higher power is. And they bring together to mold in some sort of a belief system, a syncretistic belief system of different streams from different faiths. And they think that makes them spiritual. And some of them bring Christianity right alongside Buddhism or Hinduism or, you know, other things, New Age beliefs. And so that is a very dangerous place for us to be, because there is only one God and only one way to get to that one God, you know. And so unless we understand the primacy of Jesus Christ and his representation in the world, and the expansion of the kingdom of God in that world, we are going to be aiding these Western currents that are just prevailing our culture. So we cannot continue to just stay in a compartment of faith on Sunday morning without bridging it to Monday morning. And, you know, just making a way for people to go from the sacred to the secular and to understand that that divide is not biblical.
Yeah. So one of the things that stood out to me is that you're not just analyzing the culture and saying, oh, we're doomed, but you cast a very beautiful vision of how the church can reestablish credibility in the midst of this world. And I would love to kind of do what you do in the final chapter of name some different domains of life and of society and have you kind of cast a vision for what it looks like to reestablish credibility in those domains. So why don't we start with business? What would it look like? Cast us some vision for what that might look like.
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. I'm really excited to talk about this because no, the church is not doomed. The church is Jesus's number one representation in the world. And it is his plan A. You know, God doesn't have a plan B for how the world can be saved. It is through the representation of what the bride of Christ bring as a presence of Christ. In all sectors of society, like business, arts and entertainment, education, technology. So what could that look like, you know, if the church would regain its relevance in business? Now, to do that, first of all, the church should be able to see itself as a leading actor in business. So the question is, can the church see itself as developing economically a marketplace, wherever God has placed us to serve and steward the lives of people that he has called us to bless? What does it look like in business? So how can we bring beautiful core values of our Christian faith into business? And can we see the goodness of business? Because business truly is when we see a problem in the world and we can find the valuable solution that is viable. People are willing to pay to us for the solution that we came up with. And by the way, this is called business. Mm-hmm. You know, this is as simple as that. Businesses solve problems that people desire to be solved in their communities. And so business is a good thing. Sometimes we vilify business. And I'm not talking, there is crony capitalism and all of that. I'm not saying that. That doesn't exist. Sin exists in all sectors of society can infiltrate all sectors of society. So let's ask ourselves, how can we model a different way of doing business that is actually just and beautiful and brings the solutions from heaven to earth? You know, that God would give us wisdom and a great reputation in the realm of business because we truly want to work with our communities to find viable solutions to our communities and start new businesses and scale up entrepreneurs in their endeavors.
Yeah. What about arts and entertainment?
So often I hear things like, parents in conversations with their teenagers that are getting ready to go to college or even just well-meaning Christians, but Christians probably that haven't really processed deeply this question. And so when they are talking to young adults getting into college, they discourage them from getting involved in entertainment. So if we have like young people saying, hey, I really want to become an actor. And I hear often, what? You're going to go to Hollywood? Do you know what that culture is? I think you're going to really lose your faith. You need to stay right here and you need to forget about this dream, becoming an actor or wanting to write for movies or wanting to really penetrate in the realm where, and again, we look at the sin of a particular environment and a particular sector instead of looking at the redemptive story that we as Christians can bring in those sectors and realms of society. And I think we really need to regain relevance in these particular sectors. And the Christian core values must begin to walk in those environments, or we are just really relegating them to people that don't think deeply about how to care about our community as well, how to love our neighbor better. And so I think if we believe that the Christian faith equips us to do that well, we must do it in the arts and entertainment sector and encourage young people to enter that area and to go to undertake beautiful projects where maybe not too many Christians have ventured yet.
And what about education?
That's another area that we often feel, we often hear, you know, people saying, oh, well, our youth leaves our churches and then they go to college and they lose their faith because they went to college. And I'm speaking right now to higher education in particular. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a contention between the local colleges, local universities, and the church. And almost you feel this tension or sometimes, you know, unspoken animosity, because we fear that a young adults, young people are being indoctrinated in things opposite of about faith. And then maybe the higher education, the professors there feel that the church is somehow not understanding what they are trying to accomplish. So I think if we begin to work and partner with the higher education institutions and say, you have the same mission as we. We want to make sure that the young adults in our society really succeed, that they win. So can we come together and think of projects, programs, ways to support them together? How can we do that? And come up with things that actually would find the touch points that would unite the higher education institutions and the church. And I think we can find those, and I think we can work together. We just need to sit at the table together in order to be able to bring some solution to the table.
Wonderful. And I like to end typically with a playful hypothetical question as well. So here it is. I would be curious if there were only 3 copies of Church for Monday. Let's just imagine that only 3 printed and then something weird happened. You could only give 3 of them out. Who would you want to put those books in the hands of?
That's a good question. I think the first I would love to give to my kids. I want to make sure that they will understand how important it is to walk their faith into the marketplace. But then I think the second one I would like to put into the hands of a marketplace leader who is a catalyst for change. Hmm. So that person can influence the understanding of so many Christians that are on Sunday at church and maybe confused of how much influence they can hold on Monday at work. And probably the third copy I would like to give to an influential church leader who can understand the significance of equipping whole life disciples and the embedding of the church in the marketplace. So that influential church leader can bring alongside other church leaders who would do just the same and model how the church can become a 21st century presence of Christ in the marketplace.
Mm. That's great. I think that would be incredible, especially if those people were brought together for a discussion around a table, around a meal.
Absolutely.
And I think those are great choices. And I'm glad the book did end up in my hand and that there's more than 3 copies. And it has really, sparked some ideas and some imagination within me. And so I'm grateful that you wrote it, and I'm grateful for the work that you do, and I'm grateful that you were on this podcast.
Thank you, Jim. This has been an amazing time discussing some very important issues that face the 21st century church. Thank you so much for having me today with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Before we sign off, we wanted to let you know that we would really appreciate any feedback you have for us. In particular, it would really help us out if you left a comment and gave a rating on iTunes. It will help us get the word out. A 5-star rating would be awesome, but we appreciate honesty. Also, if you are seeking some clarity about your work and calling, we would love to connect with you and help provide some career coaching. You can find out more about the career coaching at faithworkrest.com. Until next time, we pray that God would help you discern your vocation, reimagine every aspect of your occupation, and give you rich, life-giving rhythms of rest. We pray that your work would glorify God and seek the good of your neighbor. See you next week.